Environment, Energy, Natural Resources, Finance, Conference Committee will come to order. We are going to now turn to the energy sections of our bill and spend some time on those, but I think we'll let's wait for Mr. Reinholz to come, and then we'll do the – well, you know what? Since you have to leave, maybe we should just do that now.
Okay.
Let's do – we're going to start by passing out the target sheets, which we haven't made publicly distributed yet. So we'll go ahead and pass those out, okay? Make sure all the members have theirs.
Yep.
They should.
The pages have all gone to
copies
of things.
Oh.
A new one? Thank you.
Thank you. They do these things in larger.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Is this the same one we got yesterday? Yeah, it is.
Yeah, we're just going to go through and have our fiscal analysts explain it. Yeah. For the public. All right, go ahead, Mr. Mueller. And there are copies available for the public.
Madam Chair, members.
They have the copies out yet?
I'll wait.
Tell us the Senate is in recess until 4 o'clock. Okay, that's helpful. Go ahead, Mr. Mueller.
Okay, Madam Chair, this sheet being handed out is the conference target that was put together by Leadership, House, and Senate. And this is the sheet that was similar sheets are handed out to each budget conference committee. Basically, the going through it, it shows the governor's numbers, the House numbers, Senate numbers, and then the far columns on the right-hand side will be the conference targets. And it's kind of broken apart a little bit based on one-time and ongoing spending. Basically, the top number is the base. That is the same across all governors, House, and Senate, 346, 306, and 0809. Ongoing spending is $15.7 million. That's about $300,000 less than the Senate's number of 16007, which is in 0809, and it's above the House number by $3 million, or by $1 million. The House had a ongoing number in 0809 of 14.7. The next line is the compensation adjustment, is the number that's based on a 3% compensation adjustment. It was a little bit lower than the Senate number, but is higher than the House. And that number has to be carried in our bill, added to each agency. The next number is one-time spending, $74.836 million. As you can see, that is about $16 million higher than the Senate number, which was about 58.5, but is below the House number of 82.075. The last number, and I just had some conversations about this last number, is kind of pretty hard number for what we can create in revenue in this bill. As you can see, it's $4.55 million. What they've carried here is the governor's revenue numbers. So this is sort of, and one of the footnotes says that the maximum we can raise off that filings fee is the $600,000 per year that was in the governor's budget. However, some of the numbers I've been running based on just a lot of the governor's proposals and just some of the small proposals in our bill, I think we're carrying probably at least about $5 million here. And I talked with our lead fiscal analyst, and he said, you know, the 4.550 is not a cap by any means. If there's other small revenues in our bill that maybe they didn't account for when they were putting this target together, fine. But it's just trying to say, don't raise $20 million in this bill of money or something. But it's a pretty hard number, but it's not an exact number. So that gets us a total of 441 of net general fund. The 4500 has already been subtracted out, so that last number is a net. Some of the footnotes on here: this target does contain $500,000 per year of general fund for the biomonitoring. That would be contained in this budget then. And like I said, the revenues on the filing fees cannot exceed $600 per year. So that's sort of the summary version of it. And this will probably make a lot more sense once we plug it into a spreadsheet and see how it works out on the details of each side. But like I said, it's kind of taken the higher number of both the... It was closer to the Senate's ongoing number and closer to the House's one-time number, but below. So it's that's all I have.
Okay, thank you.
Comment, I guess.
Are there any questions? Discussion? Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right. Now let's turn to the energy sections of the bill. And can you remind us what page? Mr. Eloff, are you going to start this description?
We'll start with the fiscal language. Begins at the top of page R136.
136.
And first issue being the E85 cost share grants. Currently, $2 million in each of the in both the first and second year from the House, $500,000 in fiscal year 2008 from the Senate. House also has base appropriation in $2 million in 2010 and 2011, and in the House language, up to 10% of the funds can be used for pumps dispensing at least 10% biodiesel fuel.
And is there any? There's no other rider language on this. That was in the one-time bill. This is from the one-time bill, isn't it? On the Senate side? Okay. All right. Well, I think this, as it's a money, pretty much a straight money issue, we'll come back to this later.
Madam Chair?
Senator Frederickson.
In discussions that Senator Saxhog and I had, there was some discussion we had with an individual that maybe there would be a desire to change this language a little bit. I'm not going to offer that, but I'm curious if somebody...
Well, some of us have had some discussions about... I mean, there was rider language that we've used in previous years attached to this program. Is that... Well, we could... You're okay, we're trying to find that.
The language I'm referring to dealt with biodiesel.
Oh, that's...
Blending of biodiesel. And it says up to 10% of the funds may be used for cost-share grants for dispensing fuel that contains at least 10% biodiesel.
Yeah.
The discussion I had was an enhancement or embellishment of that language. I was just curious if that's going to be before us. Or?
Representative Dill.
Well, I had the same concern and had the same discussion. To accomplish the goal of getting this done with the way the tanks lay out and the way the pump blend the fuel. I mean, that's although I don't have it drafted in the amendment at this point, I did have some alternative ways to consider.
Okay. Representative Dill, do you want to move your microphone around for us? Thanks. Do you want to talk about it? We can talk about it now. I'm not... I'm not sure if we're ready to make a decision on this because there's some broader issues, but sure.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm ready to – I don't know that I'm ready because I don't have it prepared as an amendment.
Okay.
So if we could just either take more testimony on it right now and then prepare that for a little bit later in the meeting, that would be helpful for us. I see Representative Hilty wants to speak to it as well.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, Mr. Eloff actually has prepared an amendment,
oh,
which he does not have with him at the moment.
That's related to this biodiesel issue? Okay, I haven't heard anything about this particular issue. So, so does it...
And I think I gave Mr. Jarowski a copy of the non-amendment amendment earlier today, which he can probably provide for you.
So you're not quite ready to bring this in front of us? Okay.
I don't think that it's greatly controversial, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Mr. Mueller, do you want to talk about the language we've had in the bill in previous years?
Madam Chair, this language comes out of the Department of Ag appropriations from 2005 when the first grant program was established for $500,000. And there it says the commissioner, it was 50% reimburse of cost for installing the grants was in the language. Maximum of $15,000 per E85 pump was in the language. And it just said the commissioner shall grant priority to E85 pumps installed in areas of the state where gasoline service stations with E85 pumps are not reasonably available to the general public.
Okay.
So it was pretty broad, but at least gave some direction.
Yeah.
And the 50% match, I guess, is kind of important, too. Language.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to ask the department. Do you want to come on up, Mr. Bull, just for a moment and tell us why that's not in your proposal? I don't know where this particular language came from, but we didn't put that in. And would you have any problem with continuing with that approach?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mike Bull. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Renewable Energy at the Department of Commerce. What we found working with this language, working through the American Lung Associations, there are a partner on getting these grants out to retailers. And what they found was that the language that was in the 2005 bill, the appropriation, was a bit too restrictive to allow them to work with retailers in developing the most cost-effective and beneficial grant in order to get the pumps out there. So I don't think we'd have problems with guidance, but there is maybe a potential with regard to strict caps. And I think the language on the priorities, the priority to areas where E85 is not reasonably available to the public, I think that's probably good
so
language.
So what's the problem with the caps? Is $15,000? So do you have projects that are grants that are more than that?
Madam Chair, yes. There are projects out there where it takes an entire retrofit, and the cost may be higher, and especially requiring a 50% cost share for those higher grants. I think as we were coming forward with this proposal this year, we wanted to give Tim Gerlach of the American Lung Association the most flexibility that we could to get as many pumps out there as quickly as possible.
And I share that goal, too, but the more money you use on one individual grant, the fewer we're going to get out there. So I guess that's the reason for the cap, is to maximize the number that we can get on the ground. So we have to find that balance. You know, one of the issues we've had, one of the questions we've had, at least in my division, is whether we can, you know, just be really fair about this and make sure that you're not advantaging one competitor who, compared to the other one across town, who maybe one of them is getting a grant and one isn't, and how do we prevent that from happening?
Madam Chair, my understanding thus far is that we've had very few instances where that's been the case. There have been a couple where this has been an issue. And I think going forward, it's going to be an issue, excuse me, that we'll need to work to manage our way forward on. To the extent that we have a good amount of money to work with, we'll be able to get more grants out to both of those folks. But to the extent that it's the numbers are small, the idea of the grant numbers are small, then the idea of prioritizing in areas that aren't currently served.
Madam Chair,
Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bull, if the 50% match is a bit too high, would it be good guidance to say that it has to be matched with no less than a 25% match? That would give flexibility.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, I think that might be a way to approach it. And in terms of, you could also, I think, maybe give guidance that we should, you know, work towards a 50% match in some, no less than, and try to get as much of a match as possible, and then work, let Tim do his magic working with the.
Do you have the numbers, with you or at the top of your head about, you know, how much are the average? I guess we've heard that the average grant is $8,000 or something like that. So how much are these higher-end grants, and how much match are you getting in general? Are they getting in general? Do you know?
Well, Madam Chair, the second part of your question is, since we've been working with the 50% match requirement for the existing grant dollars, mm-hmm. that's the match we've been asking for and receiving. It does take quite a bit of work in some instances to get to that match level. Mr. Krogan might have some additional from his retailer's perspective about the match requirement. The cost can be much higher than the 8 or 15,000, as I mentioned. The range of pump installations, it can be something as very simple as just the pump. Sometimes you have to install a new tank. Sometimes you have to put it somewhere where there isn't. You're putting it away from the facility where you have to dig up concrete. So it depends on the type of installation, and that's why it was important to us, I think, to maintain as much flexibility as possible in terms of how you manage the
grants. Mr. Krogman, do you want to help? I just want to know how much it costs to do one of these pumps. You know, what's the range of price? It could.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers mm-hmm. Association. Depending on the size of the tank, mm-hmm. installation of a tank and a pump, all the piping, concrete, can run between $30,000 and $50,000. The Pollution Control Agency will be adopting rules yet this summer that will affix a date, and after that date, all tanks going in the ground will have to be double-walled. So that will go up between $40,000 and $65,000 or $70,000 for a tank and pump with all the work from start to finish. A double-walled tank will run between $7,000 and $10,000 more per tank on a 10,000-gallon tank.
And oftentimes, are retailers able to, or dealers able to, convert an existing tank or existing pump without having to buy to build all new?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. Depending on their supply contracts, where they're at, for example, some who have been handling kerosene will convert that kerosene tank to an E85 tank and quit handling kerosene.
Representative Hilty, you have a question for Mr. Krogman?
Please. Yes, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Krogman, or perhaps Mr. Bowles, I believe that the tanks that we're talking about are steel tanks. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, yes, I'm talking about steel or fiberglass.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Krogman, my understanding is that E85 is much more corrosive to steel than gasoline. Has that been taken into consideration in the cost of these conversions or installations?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, yes, it has. In the first generation of fiberglass tanks that came out, if the alcohol concentration got too high, it could get soft. Since then, they are fully ethanol compatible. There are many number of tanks out there handling E10 without a problem, but my last conversation with one of the installers has told me that the fiberglass tanks made now are fully compatible with ethanol.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Krogman, then what you're saying is that there might be some significant limitations in what kinds of tanks would be convertible rather than having to be replaced because of if they were installed before a certain time, they wouldn't necessarily be compatible.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, if I'm understanding your question and somebody were going to replace an older fiber or try to use an older fiberglass tank, that is possible. But the underground tank regulations that came in 1988 required retanking of most facilities. So the steel tanks, particularly out there, are fully compatible, and I would speculate most of the fiberglass tanks.
Thank you.
And Mr. Krogman, or Mr. Bull, can you tell us how many stations out there are putting E85 pumps in without any grants, without any public help or subsidy? Do you have any idea?
Chair, my understanding is of the 300 or so tanks that we have currently out in the state, that 200 of them have received grants directly. All of them have received some kind of or some kind of assistance. Almost all of them have received some kind of assistance, but I think 200 or so of the 300 have received grants. That's my
opinion. And Mr. Krogman, go ahead.
Madam Chair, from my discussions with retailers, most of the ones I have talked to have gotten some form of grant. It's been as small as $1,000. I think as high as 18,000.
18,000?
Yes.
Is that what your grants, Mr. Bull? What's the highest end that you've been? How many large grants have you given out at this point? Do you have any idea, or how big are they?
Madam Chair, I'm researching trying to find it in my brain. My sense is very small. Okay. Is the number of really big of the big size grants, but. You know, I think a point to make is that these are all volunteers to some extent, that no one's making the retailers put in an E85 grant, so that a pump, so that they're motivated to want to put them in them. They're volunteering to put them in. We're looking for a little bit of maybe a little bit of help, and so that's what we're.
I understand that, but I would think that they're not just doing it for charitable purposes,
yes.
That they're making good money off of this because there's a big consumer demand. Is that, I mean, especially with the prices staying lower around the state for E85 than gasoline?
Madam Chair, I think the way I'd phrase that is that the demand fluctuates mm-hmm. with the price. That if when the price is high, there's a big demand. Mm-hmm. The price is high for unleaded gasoline. The price for E85 increases, and we see a spike. I don't think anyone's making a whole bunch of money off of selling E85.
Yeah, it's going to do it without gas. All right, I saw some hands up. Senator Frederickson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bull, I have a little different question. The House language would allow you to use up to 10% of the funds for cost sharing for biodiesel fuel. Does the department have a position on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Frederickson, I think this goes back to some of the language we had previously. There's an amendment that I think the way to answer the question, there's an amendment that Mr. Krogman and others have worked out on this, the biodiesel provision, that I think would do the same, reach the same goals, but do it in a better way. So if you decide to, I think promoting the availability of biodiesel is a very good thing. We'd support that. I think that the new approach might be the way to go.
Thank you.
I drive a little diesel Golf, and then more places I can go buy higher blends of biodiesel, I'll be very happy.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. Mr. Krogman, you said that that some retailers convert existing facilities to a new facility for dispensing E85, but in at least in the Senator Bakkenmai's area of the state, they tell us that because they have to handle a variety of different grades of gasoline as well as blended diesel for winter operations, premium unleaded fuel for boats, snowmobiles, ATVs, and the like, that they have no additional space to do those conversions. And so my question to you, Mr. Krogman, is on a statewide basis, I think in our area we have almost no opportunity to convert because of the different uses that are needed out in the field. But on a statewide basis, what type of opportunity cumulatively is there for E85 conversion as a percentage, let's say?
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, there's about 3,700 convenience stores and service stations in the state. Of those, 300 already have a pump, let's say. So we're getting down to 3,400 locations. Of those, there are probably 3,400, there's 700-800 who may never want to do it because they are in an area where there's not a demand at all or won't do it in the foreseeable future. In your area where there is a need for more specialty fuels, it would be a whole new pump and tank. And as mentioned earlier, we wonder about the competitive factor. If you have four locations in a town and one or two get a grant, what do the other two do? Do they have to have E85 or do they just wish they had E85? We're not sure.
Well, Mr. Krogman, we've had that same concern as well. That is something we haven't quite figured out how to avoid interfering with a fair competitive market. Sorry, I forgot my question. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Mr. Bull, there must be some price point at which we do not need to offer subsidies anymore. I heard conversation on the radio this morning when I was coming in about $4 gasoline. Do you have a price point in mind where a subsidy is no longer needed, that the market will take care of this?
Mr. Bull.
Chair, Representative Wienius, when you say this, I think we're talking right now in the context of helping with the installation of the infrastructure. And I think the important thing will be need to advance the availability of the infrastructure, the availability of the fuel, and the availability of and the number of cars in the and trucks in the fleet that can use flex fuel vehicles. And so I think when we get a point, when we're at a point where the number of flex fuel vehicles that are out there and the demand for the E85 fuel, when we reach that some kind of critical mass, at that point, I think that the market would likely to take over. But I don't think we'll see that for a number of years. I don't know if it's a price point, per se, as a critical mass of availability.
I assume as we transition towards new generation cellulosic ethanol, that those will be, that type of fuel will be compatible with these pumps. Is there any question about that?
Madam Chair, there is not. It's chemically, it's as you put it into the tank, it's exactly the same fuel.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. And we'll just have to, I think, lay this issue aside as we make decisions about our budget. And if we have amendments to language amendments, we'll just deal with those when we bring this issue back. All right, next, Mr. Elof.
Yeah, still on page R36, Madam Chair. We've got a requirement that XL transfer on the House side $2.5 million in 2008 and in 2009 to the Department of Commerce for funds to be used for renewable energy purposes. The Senate language is $3.975 million the first year, $1.5 million the second year, for a total of $5,475,000. Both bills specify some equivalent provisions here. For example, $500,000 each year for capital grants for on-farm biogas recovery facilities in both bills, $500,000 each year for rebates for solar electricity projects each year is in both bills. And at the bottom of the page, $500,000 each year for continued funding for community energy technical assistance to the CERTS teams, the community energy research teams. The House also specifies on the top of page R-137 that out of this, these funds, $1 million each year would be going to for automotive technology projects with a special focus on plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. That's not contained in the Senate language.
We do have in the Senate, on the Senate side, we have one of the recommendations or a version of a recommendation from the plug-in hybrid task force at the very end on the from the Electric Energy Task Force. So we could maybe compare that. Ms. Baker, do you know which one? Pardon me?
Could you repeat that?
Page 137.
Okay. What is it? What page is it?
$4 million the whole thing.
Here on page R-142, the Senate was able only to fund this study, which requires the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force to look at environmentally friendly manufacturing and assembly processes. And this was a part of this was a piece of one of the recommendations from the plug-in hybrid electric task force to look at opportunities that for green manufacturing that could help workers who were at the Ford plant, who worked at the Ford plant. Okay. On the certs issue, I've been asked to bring up an issue to try to provide support for faith-based organizations that want to get into the community energy technical assistance and outreach work that CERTS does. And I don't have the amendment in front of me. I don't have language, but I just wanted to bring that up for a little committee discussion. They've been doing work around the state in trying to organize congregations in clean energy issues and have been very effective at bringing new constituencies into that discussion. And I wanted to ask the committee if there'd be if we could consider doing something like that with the CERTS program. Do you want to respond, Representative Hilty, or do you have any? I know you had some concerns about it, so maybe we should just discuss that for a moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that this issue has arisen at the behest of one particular metro area group. And as I have pointed out to them, I really don't see anything that is in the language that's contained in this bill regarding the structure of CERTS that would prevent them from simply being the metro area CERTS team, since there isn't one currently.
Mm-hmm. And maybe we should.
I think that if we're talking about setting up some parallel system of groups statewide, that all we're doing is saying, you know, we're going to have two different organizations competing for the same funds, which are not that generous to begin with, and they would be competing with organizations that have been in existence now for some 4 or 5 years, and as far as I'm aware, and I am associated with one of those groups, I think that they've all been doing really good work across the state. I don't see the necessity of setting up any kind of parallel organizations to try to accomplish the same thing. I do believe that the organization that brought this forward has done a lot of very meritorious work, but I don't think they would be prevented from participating in the CERTS organization.
Well, maybe I'm going to ask Mr. Bull if he could come up for just a moment again and ask him that question, because I agree with you. I don't want to have a new group competing with the existing CERTS teams that are doing a really great job. But is there a way that we could try to let's just ask if you think under the current – if we adopted the statutory language that the House has, would a faith-based group that's doing that type of work be eligible to start up a new CERTS team in the metro area?
Madam Chair, again, I'm Mike Bull from the Department of Commerce. My reading of the proposed language is that, yes, they would be able to there's actually specific language that says additional CERTS may be CERTS teams, maybe CERTS for the folks who don't know, or clean energy resource teams. They're groups of citizens working with utilities, working with other organizations around in regions around the state to promote technical and educating members of the community on clean energy technologies and opportunities, and we found that to be just a critical part of what we do here in the state to promote clean energy. The folks that I think that have been talking to you, Madam Chair, about the amendment, and you, Representative Hilty, as well, they have done a tremendous job working in their communities to do some of these very good things. And I'd work very hard, I think, to find opportunities to get under the proposed language in the House, opportunities to coordinate and integrate their activities into the current CERTS.
Okay, great. Well, it's helpful to have that on the record, I think. Thank you very much. Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, I will also be very supportive of that, because I think the more we can expand the work that we need to do in this area, the better. So I think it's very important that we work with as many groups and as diverse groups as we possibly can to educate the community. So I think that will be an excellent opportunity for us to include everyone.
And I'm really supportive of making sure we have this work going on in the metropolitan area, which has been one of the only kind of missing piece from the CERTS program in the past, which has been doing very good work.
Madam Chair, maybe two more quick points about that. One is that the million-dollar request that we put in, the 500 and 500 for the biennium for the current CERTS, is based on their plan going forward, and we want to make sure that we wouldn't get them off that plan or dilute the possibility for that plan. So that's the integration component. And the other piece is the CERTS folks around the state have been really focused on non-advocacy. They've been, and that's a concern, making sure that as we expand CERTS and build on CERTS, that it stays in the technical assistance and education and component, and not so much into the political and the advocacy. I think one of the big strengths of CERTS is that it's a sense that this is a sort of a safe place for the community and utilities to work together on issues and not and work through concerns, and not so much a place to go and argue.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Bull. And I do have to acknowledge that the CERTS folks did ask for more money in order to add a metro area team. So we will keep that in mind. but neither the House nor the Senate was able to come up with more money and under our current budgets. Members, these proposals that are funded under the Renewable Development Fund, I think we'll have to set them aside, even though we have pretty much identical language in a number of these and dollar amounts. But the piece that's undecided is whether within our target, whether what will be funded with general fund and what will be funded with Renewable Development Fund. And we just won't know that until we reach the end of our budgeting process, members, in the next 24 hours. Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, I was looking at similar sections at the bottom of page 137, mm-hmm. where we're transferring, the Senate transfers $4 million each year to the Department of Commerce, and in the House side where they transferred $300 million and $2 million. Have we resolved that difference yet? House language is 106.13 and then through several lines. And the Senate is 530 through 5530 through 56.6.
Mr. Eloff?
I think there are maybe two different things going on there, Senator. The language on the House side that you're referring to transfers those funds to the Department of Commerce for grant awards to be made on a cost-share basis by a three-member panel, commissioners from PCA, Commerce, and Agriculture. I think the provision at the Senate at the bottom of the page is more parallel to the House provision at the bottom of the page, which talks about funding going to IRENA at the University of Minnesota, the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment. The Senate has those funds going as well to the Agricultural Utilization Resource Research Institute in addition to IRE. But I think those are the two parallel provisions at the bottom of the page. The one in the middle of the page is just House language with no Senate counterpart.
Go ahead, Senator Frederick.
Well, Madam Chair, I was just noting there is a dollar difference between those two provisions.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair, on that point, there's also a source difference. In regards to funding for IRE, the House uses general fund and the Senate is using RDF.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a whole other conversation or decision that we have to make. Is this how we're going to deal with the RDF fund and which projects to fund out of that? And then that ties in then to which ones will be available for general fund funding also. So, mm-hmm. And there's also a broader discussion that myself and the House fiscal analysts have had about how to structure all this RDF funding. The House and the Senate structure it a little bit differently and about how the money shall be transferred into departments and whether we track it within a state fund or not. And so there's a couple decisions with the RDF that we actually have to make.
Okay, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to address a little bit further Senator Frederickson's question about IRE. Senator Frederickson and members, what we did in the House is first of all provide for two additional years of the payments out of the Conservation Improvement Fund that Xcel Energy has been making specifically to fund IRE. That's $2.2 million a year. So what is represented here in this $3 million expenditure from the general fund in the second year of the biennium is in addition to the $2.2 million from the Conservation Improvement Program, so that IRE would be funded as it has been consistently at approximately $5 million a year. In the next biennium, what we did is include that $5 million per year to IRE in the base in the Energy Division of Commerce. My thought about that, Senator, was that as things stood in the governor's proposal, there was not $5 million, but $10 million proposed in next generation energy grants, competitive grants that were basically taking money that was already being used for competitive grants from the Renewable Development Fund and moving it to the Department of Commerce to be used in exactly the same way. And according to how that was structured, IRE would just have been one of the competitors for those grants. My thought was that since IRE clearly, in my opinion, has done some of the best research that has been done in these areas, that they ought not to be wondering from year to year where the money was going to come from. And I thought that they merited actually being put on a more secure footing. So that's what we did in the House. That's what's going on here.
Thank you. That's helpful.
And Representative Hilty, I think we are also really supportive of IRE. We just need to make sure that we, number one, if we have the general fund dollars to do this, we don't really know until we get through the whole budget. And secondly, whether we have the tails budget to make it ongoing. But it's a good goal. And members, I guess really I'm realizing that because we have this so much that's general different funds from the House to the Senate that I think we need to just kind of skip ahead, and we're really just kind of reviewing things we already reviewed, and let's see what else we need to do that's that we haven't done yet, because we can't resolve those fund differences right now. We're going to have to wait till we have a spreadsheet in front of us to do that. I don't know if there's questions about any of these. I think maybe what we should do is jump ahead to anything that's either funded in the RDF in one body or funded in the RDF in one body and general fund in the other. I think we have to set those aside for now. So I'm trying to get to the next issue.
Now, Chair, I could point out that in the House bill, we did not fund anything from the RDF except the governor's proposals that were based on funding from the RDF.
Okay, well, we funded some of the governor's proposals and not others, and then we funded some additional items.
Well, Madam Chair,
instead.
I was saying we funded all of the governor's proposals. I was just saying we didn't use the RDF for anything but the governor's proposals.
Okay, well, again, I think we're going to have to defer that. I would move, it looks like the next item that I can see that's not one of those funding issues is the deaf and hard of hearing on page 142. I've been asked, the Senate bill, we funded this at $60,000. This is from the TAM fund, correct?
Yes.
And we were asked if we could, by the advocates, if we could accede to the House position on this, because apparently they'd be able to hire a permanent hearing interpreter if we could accept the higher number in the House position. And that fund has a significant amount of money available in it, so it wouldn't affect our general fund target. So I just wanted to raise that and see if members had any objection to accepting the House position there on sub 111.6.
Well, Madam Chair, would it be appropriate to move the adoption of the House position at this time?
Please. On that motion, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. All right. Good. We're making progress. All right. The next few proposals relate to funding. Where's the other energy section that we have in the bill?
The statutory language starts on page R200.
Okay, let's work on the language. Sure. Well, can we just go through this in order? As long it's in the energy section, correct? Yeah, let's just go through this in order, and we'll get to that hopefully before we're done. All right. Who wants to? Does staff want to start here?
Go through,
Mr. Eloff.
Sure. On page R200, towards the bottom of the page, the first section designates the City of Elk River as the state energy city.
Any discussion? Representative Wagenius.
Let us just note here that this is a state energy city in the order of a state flower, a state bird. And I do have a concern that there are a lot of cities that would like to achieve the status of being an energy city, and I'm not sure we want to preclude that. That's just something... for those of you who are in other cities and would like them to do something like that, we may be putting up a barrier when we really don't want to put up a barrier. What we really want to do is put up a goal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe we should set that aside, unless there's a motion. All right.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Hilty.
I think one of the things that we had discussed earlier regarding this is that, first of all, a little of the history of the Elk River proposal is that they have been, in fact, representing themselves as the state energy city for some time, and it's kind of seeking to legitimize that in this bill. If members would be agreeable to it, I realize that this is not, in fact, what they were seeking in bringing this proposal forward, but I think that considering Representative Wagenius's observations that members might find it more acceptable to in the single line that represents the bill delete the second the and insert a
state energy city. And Representative Hilty, I've had some discussions about this issue over the weekend as well and heard those concerns. I didn't realize that this was in the same section of law, even though it did pass through committee, that this is in the same section of law as the state flower, the state muffin, the state everything, and that this is sort of, it really would be elevating this city above all other cities that may be interested in this type of idea.
Madam Chair,
Senator Fredrickson.
My observation is that this is far afield from any financial impact on energy, environment, or commerce. I think it should be a freestanding policy bill.
Which it is in the Senate, I believe. But I don't know why it ended up in this bill in the House. All right, well, let's move on. There's controversy.
The next provision at the bottom of page R200 is for the creation of a program in the Department of Administration to reward state employees who make suggestions on changes in operations that result in energy savings and awards them, I believe, 50% of the of annual energy savings up to a maximum of $1,000 for each suggestion.
And this went through the Energy Policy Committee, Representative Hilty?
That's correct, Madam Chair. I believe it had some other stops in the House as well. I know that there was some concern on the part of the Department of Administration about the way this is worded. I do not know at this point whether that's been resolved or not, but I think that Mr. Rhodes is here to tell us about that.
Okay, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We have been discussing this with the author of the bill, Representative Welty, and at his request, we had an hour-long conversation with IBM in his district that implemented a program such as this. They call it an event, and they do it a little differently. In fact, they're going to be developing some software, and they said that they would probably be able to let us use the software to give it a trial. What we would like to do is we think that in the language, the subdivision 2 kind of prescribes what the outcome they'd like to have. And so we thought it would be better to come up with a little different language so we could do it, a pilot program. We want to do this, and we will do this. It's just easier to do this with a language that permits us to be a little more generalistic in our approach because we need to work with the IBM folks and that type of thing. There's also an issue of data practices with how do we acknowledge the winner. If we give them money, we'd have to just say it was a reward, but not for what. So with those kinds of questions, we proposed some language. I have a copy that I can we made a minor change to the one that we gave to Representative Hilty, but this is we presented this to Representative Welty as well. So he's in the loop of this whole discussion. And if you'd like, I just pass it out to you, and then you can do it at a later date or whatever you want to do. We just want to make it workable for everybody.
Okay. So the main changes that it makes are from this language?
Main Madam Chair, members, the main change is it gets rid of, deletes the Division II until we figure out a program. It's a little more generalistic in language.
Would you please?
It seems to have a little better approach for our department.
Okay. And Representative Welty has agreed to this language, is your understanding?
Madam Chair, I would not say that. What I would say is that we have presented to him, and he was going to talk to Representative Hilty's committee administrator, and that's why I'm just passing out today. I don't expect you to make a decision without talking to him. We want to work with everybody, obviously. We want to make it come out right.
Okay. All right. Well, we're getting copies made, and we'll have to check in with Representative Hilty.
That's
and
fine. I understand.
But we've heard your testimony that you support the with the amendment. You'll be supportive.
Madam Chair, that is correct, and the concept is it's a great idea to do. We have no problem with that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on.
Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I just wondering if
Dale.
You'd accept an amendment to that about including legislators. I mean, if legislators had good idea, we could get performance pay.
So
if a bill passed and became law, we let's say get $2,000.
Madam Chair, how about former legislators?
Now you're going too far.
Madam Chair, well, I was serious.
Get that amendment ready, Representative Dill. Senator
Madam
Frederickson.
Chair, Representative Dill, our reward is getting reelected.
And getting our bills passed.
That's a debatable point.
All right. Let's move on to the next section, please.
The next section towards the bottom of the page on R201 includes the new Monticello dry cast storage area. It amends current language, which indicates that if a disposal site becomes available outside the state, that the dry casks will be moved to that facility first. Rather than any waste from the spent nuclear fuel storage pool at the facilities. And this would just say that that's true both of Prairie Island and the Monticello facility.
Madam Chair.
Senator Frederickson.
Chair, Mr. Eloff, when you'd explained this, you explained one little difference from the language before us. You said it replied to both Prairie Island and Monticello, and the language we have says Prairie Island or Monticello. And I think it should be the way that you explained it to us. In other words, and rather than or.
Mr. Eloff?
The reason why I'm hesitating, Madam Chair, is I'm not clear, for example, if Yucca Mountain becomes available. I don't know if a storage site that is newly created would be eligible to send materials there. We hear that they're full up already.
Representative Hilty, did you have any discussion about this in the Energy Committee?
Madam Chair, no, we did not. But just thinking about it, I think that actually there would be a significant difference in whether we said and or, and ties them together in a way that I'm not sure is what is intended here.
Madam Chair, I think Yucca Mountain is intended to accept all nuclear waste, all spent fuel rods. I don't know why we would say we're going to ship it from either Prairie Island or Monticello. I would think COPE would want to ship it from both and get it out of Minnesota.
Yeah, but it's full. Yeah, but what is that?
Well, Madam Chair, there isn't any either here.
Madam Chair, could we have counsel take a look at this and
okay. Give us a recommendation. Ms. Baker?
Madam Chair, I do think it's a policy decision because what if they said each state, no matter how many nuclear waste you have, you can send from one site, but and maybe next year too, well, then we would want the or there so that we could just choose which one. If it says and, somebody could say, hey, if we can't do them all together, we can't do one separately because of the statute. So I think that's a policy, you know, that you guys have to decide on.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No, you're right.
You're absolutely correct, Baker.
I think or gives added flexibility.
Is that, Senator Fredrickson, does that seem reasonable to you? I think Ms. Baker is correct. I mean, it depends on the scenario.
Yeah.
Most likely they would be treated the same, but in the event that they were treated differently, this would allow that flexibility. I thought this was more in the nature of a technical amendment. I think that was how it was presented to us. We can ask Excel if they – is there anyone from Excel who wants to tell us that it's not a technical amendment? No.
Madam Chair,
not jumping up.
Unless I hear from somebody differently, I'll just be satisfied with or, at least for the time being.
Do you want to move the House language, Representative Hilty?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to do that.
On both section 3 and 4?
That would be correct.
All right. If there's no further discussion, not hearing any, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you. All right. Mr. Eloff or Ms. Baker, whoever's.
Madam Chair, R202, this is the more on the Monticello and Island. The first language difference is on the Senate side on page 56.27, which gives the utility a chance to eligibility to apply for a renewable development fund grants. And the language just goes on to say we need to be treated exactly the same as other grant applicants. The House doesn't have that language.
And members, I would point out, we have the language that should be in front of you that's been passed around. That's SS2199CE. And this is one of those oddities that where the policy discussion came after the omnibus bill. And so this is the language that was passed in the Energy Committee that does slightly modify what's in here. We have a few of those examples in this omnibus bill where the policy committee reviewed it afterwards. And so in the section on the next page, R203, the recovery of utility greenhouse gas infrastructure costs, this language was significantly changed and it was narrowed in the Energy Committee, and that's what's in this document that you all have. And so I would like to substitute the language that the committee approved for the language that's in the omnibus bill, and it's been agreed to with the utilities as well. But I don't know. So I guess if we – Representative Hilty, let me ask you if you want to act on these provisions related to the CAS dollars now, or do you want to defer that to later?
Madam Chair, I don't have any problem with subdivision one or section one, but could you explain the differences in section two between the language that's there and the language that appears on page R203, section 9 on the Senate side? I see that it's much more specific. There are some things that I don't understand, like the cast iron natural gas distribution and service lines. I don't see what that has to do with greenhouse gas. And also, isn't that something that would occur in any case?
Why don't we ask Mr. Evans to come up and explain that to us briefly from Excel?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Rick Evans from Excel Energy. Representative Hilty, there are two devices, for lack of a better term, on our system that create greenhouse gas problems. other than carbon dioxide coming out of our smokestacks. One of them is methane gas, which is natural gas that we deliver through our pipelines. We have some cast iron gas lines on our system, which we would like to replace. We're under no compulsion to replace them. They're operating just fine, but they're older. They tend to become loose. They tend to leak small amounts of natural gas, not in a manner that's dangerous, but in a manner that does release greenhouse gas to the atmosphere. What we're seeking here is the ability to go in and replace that cast iron gas line with the more, I'll call it plastic. The chemists would tell me I'm wrong, but it's like a PVC pipe, which is what's currently used, which is does not allow the gas to escape. So it is a measure to alleviate the escaping of greenhouse gas other than carbon dioxide by going in to replace those pipes. What this legislation allows us to do is when we do that to go and put a rider essentially so that we can recover the cost of the investment that we make in doing that. Ordinarily, that investment would be recovered in a rate case. This allows us to recover it immediately, which makes it easier for us financially to undertake this project. The other item that's mentioned in the amendment are these sodium hexafluoride switches, or rather breakers. These are devices that are on our electric system. Sodium hexafluoride is a greenhouse gas. There are new breakers that are available to us. Would be a fairly significant investment, about $11 million, I'm told, to replace the old breakers with the new breakers. The result will be the sodium hexafluoride gas will not be leaking out of the old breakers. And so this was something we tried to put in the conservation bill that alleviates the release of greenhouse gases. The authors of that bill didn't want to put it there because it's not strictly speaking conservation, though it has the same effect, which is to lower the amount of greenhouse gas that we emit from our system. And this, again, would just allow us to go get the cost recovery, to recover the costs that we invest in replacing those breakers.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, in reading Section 2, I'm curious what the connection is between public utility furnishing gas service and a public utility that owns a nuclear power plant. Is that merely a way to narrow this provision down so it only applied to one utility in the, state?
This was originally proposed by Xcel as a, in a, regards to us negotiating about money for CASCs. But in the Energy Committee, we did, in the discussions that followed, the discussion was broadened with other utilities, and so the gas utilities were interested in having this cost recovery authority as well, so we ended up adding them in the Energy Committee. Is there anything well, Senator Fredrickson.
But Madam Chair, the provision that doesn't the first provision, a public utility that owns a nuclear power plant, doesn't that narrow it down to only Xcel?
And then it says, and a public utility furnishing gas service. So that includes the gas companies as well. So they're the only ones, to my knowledge, that were interested in being part of this.
And I think it covers both.
So there was an effort to talk with all the utilities to be include those who wish to be included. That's my understanding. Is that right, Mr. Evans?
That's correct.
So that's how it left the Energy Committee in any case.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Hilty.
If this includes all gas utilities, why do we need to have any mention of a utility owning a nuclear power plant?
Mr. Evans?
The sodium hexafluoride breakers are on our electric system. We happen to be both a gas utility and an electric utility. So the sodium hexafluoride breakers are on our electric system. We were the only electric utility that was interested in having this authority, and that's why it's limited to our utility. On the gas side, both CenterPoint Energy and Xcel Energy, as gas companies, would like to be able to replace this cast iron pipe and use this cost recovery. So that's why they're put in that way.
I was told that some of the utilities didn't want to be named because then they thought they might have to do something they don't want to do. So whatever. That was certainly not the intention, but that's the why we narrowed it and drafted it this way. And I had heard some discussion of some House language that might amend this section, so I think we'll just defer action on it for right now. But thank you, Mr. Evans. Okay. let's try to get some of the some things done that we can get done now. I think there may be an amendment on some other section 7. The House, we just checked, and we haven't, I mean, the Senate hasn't convened yet, so I think it's our intention once the Senate is under call, we'd like to take a recess for a half hour, and we think that most of the other, the House will also be available at about 4:30, roughly. We're going to be able to reconvene. So we'll have to take a brief recess in a few minutes, but we'll go a few more minutes here. The hydrogen language, is that, that's roughly identical, isn't it?
On page R205, Madam
yes.
Chair? Yes. That, yes. Yes, Section 8 on the House side and Section 10 on the Senate side are identical.
Okay. Would someone like to move that language?
I would be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Hilty moves the House position on the hydrogen initiative.
Madam Chair, that would include... We want to define the sections
yes.
that are included in that.
Section 9 is also identical, and Section 10, again, on the House side, is identical with Section 12 on the Senate side, except that one phrase, general timeline, is on another side of a comma. So that to that point, they're identical,
okay,
except
so
for that exception.
Representative Hilty moves adoption of Sections 9 and 10. As noted.
Yes.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dill.
I don't think I'm going to be able to be here after we come back. So I'm wondering if at your indulgence we could go to the area that I wanted to discuss for a possible amendment.
That's fine. I just point out what I think we're going to accomplish to try to go through the rest of the energy section and adopt language that we think we're able to adopt. We're ready to go on. We're going to take very brief testimony on the Manitoba Hydro issue.
That's the issue I want to address.
Oh, okay. And so it might take some... We might want to have the testimony first. And then the other piece, I think, well, there's other provisions in the energy language that I think we're ready to move to take action on. So we can jump ahead to that, Representative Dill, but I'm just wondering if perhaps we should, it might take a little longer than you have in mind, because we do need to have,
it'll
I did ask
very
for
simple.
Very brief
if
testimony.
You just agreed to my amendment, then we wouldn't spend a lot of time on
it. All right. What page are we on? Do you have the amendment?
It's page 236.
Rolling stuff except
and it would be starting on line 199.31 mm-hmm. and continuing through 200.10.
Okay.
And I would move to delete that section. And, Madam Chair, if I could go ahead with the reasons for that.
Okay.
Okay, well, first, members, XL purchases about 500 megawatts of power from Manitoba Hydro. And it comes from a system of dams that are up on the Nelson River in the vicinity of the Hudson Bay, on the southwest corner of Hudson Bay. And it passes in the near vicinity of the town of Gillam, Manitoba. Now, I happen to be really familiar with this because for the last 20 years I've goose hunted on the Nelson River within sight of many of these dams, taking snow geese and Canada geese for the last 20 years. Now, it has been determined that the dams do have environmental and socioeconomic impacts on the communities and individuals around the Nelson River, which happens to include some Indian tribes, some Cree Indian tribes. Because of that, the Canadian government, the province of Manitoba, and Manitoba Hydro and the affected tribes entered into an agreement back in 1977 called the Northern Flood Agreement. And all of those parties... they acknowledged that the effects of the hydroelectric generation were not something that they could quantify at that very time, that those effects would unfold over many years and even decades. So the agreement, in the Northern Flood Agreement, it allowed for an ongoing arbitration between all of the parties of the agreement, the tribes, the hydro company, which, by the way, is owned by the Canadian government and the province. this ongoing negotiation arbitration has ended up in spending hundreds of millions of dollars in payments to the affected parties. In 2003, one of the five tribes challenged the PUC and XL over their power purchase agreement with Manitoba Hydro. And at the time, they said that XL Energy had not considered in their plan here in Minnesota the socio and economic impacts or the environmental impacts of the hydro generation, again, in another country. I mean,
Representative Dill, we're voting on the bonding bill. The Senate needs to go vote. I had promised that we would take some brief testimony on this issue, so I'm afraid we're going to have to defer this issue for a little bit. So hopefully you can be back for a little while and we can continue this discussion. The committee stands in recess, and we will be back in roughly half an hour to 45 minutes at most, okay? So please come back as soon as you're able. Thank you.